Okay, I want to first talk about rain and the significance of rain since we started davening for rain now. There are many Mamori Chazal that say that rain is as great as the Torah, the day the Torah was given, a rainy day, and the rain is greater than Tchias HaMesim, and rain is similar to the time of Geula, redemption. What is so significant about rain, aside from the benefit, obviously, that comes to the world, that there's water and irrigation and water to drink, and life depends on rain, but to compare it to Matan Torah, and to, it gives it spiritual significance, not only physical significance. There's a Medrash that says the following. There are three things that depend on each other, and because of that, they are equally important. And they are Adam, human beings, and Motor, and rain, and Adama, and land. Land needs people to cultivate it, and both of them need rain to be able to be cultivated. And without the three, the world can't exist. It's interesting that each of these things has another name. Adam is also called Ish, and Adama is also called Eretz, and Motor is also called Geshem. So we have Adam Ish, Adama Eretz, Geshem Motor, Motor Geshem. The meaning, I think, is the following, and the interdependence on these three things, and then we'll understand why rain is such an important thing spiritually. A human being, let's start with the Adama. Adama is land in its raw state, not developed. Undeveloped land is Adama. Dirt, earth. Eretz is where it is developed. Eretz has a connection to the word Ratzon, will. The people can develop the Adama into Eretz. That's why on vegetables we make a bracha, Borei Pri Ho Adama. And we refer to the ground that the vegetables grow in as Adama. Whereas when we make a bracha on bread, we make the bracha Hamotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz. Why not Min Ha'adama? Or why not Borei Pri Ha'aretz? So one idea is this idea. Vegetables basically do not have to be processed and are eaten in their raw state. So they are a product of Adama, of the earth in its raw state. But bread is a processed commodity, and therefore it doesn't come out of the Adama as bread, right? But it's after you cultivate and you bring it to its completion, then it's bread. So bread is related to Aretz, the cultivated, perfected earth, and not the earth in its raw state. So that's Adama and Eretz. Adama represents the raw, unperfected state, and the Eretz, the perfected state. Same thing goes with human beings. Adam is the designation of a human being as coming from the earth in his potential raw state. The purpose of a human being is to change himself from an Adam into an Ish. Ish means a master. He masters himself, masters the world around him. So Adam is called Adam because he comes from the Adama. It's interesting, for the sake of women, that it says that, why was the first woman called Isha? Ki me Ish lukacha zos. Why wasn't she called Adama? Because from Adam lukacha zos. Because the woman was already created from the more perfected side of man, not from the more imperfected and raw state. She never was an Adama. She started as an Isha. She started already in a more perfected state. So woman, in creation-wise, was more perfect than the original man was. She already was created in a more perfected way than the original man was created. He was created Adam minu Adama. She never was created Adama. She was Isha from Ish, from the more perfected side of man. And then there is Geshem and Mutar. Geshem refers to the rain as it comes down from the clouds. Geshem means hitgashmut. It materializes in the sky and comes down. Or perhaps Geshem also is made of two words. Gesh Shom. Go there. It's the rain coming down with tremendous strength. Matar means the rain when it hits its target. Matara. Its target. So the rain as it hits the ground is called Matar. Geshem is when it's falling from the sky. That's one of the reasons why we say Mashiv Haruach Umorid HaGeshem. And we say the same Tal Umatar. Why don't we say the same Tal V'Geshem? Or Mashiv Haruach Umorid HaMatar? So one simple idea is that Mashiv Haruach Umorid HaGeshem is to represent God's strength in bringing rain. So God's strength in bringing rain is Geshem, is the rain as it descends. That's where it's strong. On the other hand, when we ask for rain, we don't really care how it gets there. The main thing is it should reach its target and give the benefits of what rain, right? So when we mention the strength of God, we mention it as Geshem. When we mention it as bringing the same, please give us rain, we're not concerned of how it comes down. We're concerned more of what its goal is. So there we say the same Talumata. We'll see a deeper idea in a second, but that's a simple idea. In any case, the idea is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world that is imperfect, and he wants us to perfect it. This is brought out with the following Medrash. The Medrash says that Turnus Rufus HaRosha once asked Rabbi Akiva, what's better, what man makes or what God makes? And he expected Rabbi Akiva, of course, to say what God makes is better than what man makes. But Rabbi Akiva surprised him, and he said, no, what man makes is for sure superior to what God makes. So Turnus Rufus says, how could that be? He said, very simple. You're going home to eat lunch. Your wife made bread and cake, and God made wheat, which is better. Obviously, the bread and cake are much better than the wheat. So obviously, what man makes is better than what God makes. The meaning being that God created an imperfect, raw state world, and he wants us to perfect it. And along with perfecting the world, we perfect ourselves too. And that's one of the meanings that they say is Asher Bara Elokim La'asos. God created the world in its raw state, La'asos, that man should take the world and perfect it and bring it to its perfected and developed state. He should develop the world. And in developing the world, he also should develop himself and realize that he also was created in a raw state, and he has to develop himself. That is the whole idea of a person being created in this world. God didn't create us robots. He didn't create us perfect. He created us in a way that we can perfect ourselves. And therefore, he put us in a world where we need to perfect the world around us also, in knowing that that is our goal here. Perfect yourself, perfect the world. So therefore, the goal is that man should take from the Adama and make it Eretz, and he should take from himself and make him from Adam to Ish, to a master over himself, a master over the world. However, there's a danger in that. And the danger in that is that if a person is involved in perfecting the world and bringing the world to perfection and bringing himself to perfection, he may think that he can do whatever he wants. He may think that, you know, he's a creator. Right, he's not dependent on God because, look, he's even superior to God. He can make things better than God. And that's what happened to the Migdal Bavel, to the Dor HaPlaga. Dor HaPlaga, please. That's okay, I'm flattered. When I start speaking, people usually try to leave. In my shul, they had to lock the doors to make sure nobody left during my drasha. The So for people to come in when I'm speaking is an honor. In any case, so people get carried away with technology, with their improving the world. In fact, some say, I think the Malbim says it, door le door yishabach ma'asecha. One generation to the other not praises your works, but improves on your works. L'shabeach can mean l'hashbiach, to improve. So one generation to another improves. Right? What one generation made the telephone, another one made cell phones, and then iPods, and who knows what else. So technology, every generation builds on the technology of the generation before and improves it. So man can get carried away with technology and begin to think that he doesn't need God. He's not a partner with God, but he is improving on what God did. And he can do it any way he wants. I once saw a quote from a doctor in Miami years ago. This is before they even discovered AIDS. He said, given enough money and enough time, there is no disease that modern medicine can't conquer. Now that's a real chutzpah, because he didn't even know some diseases. But money, time, that's all. Human beings can do anything. People begin to think like that. And that's why Migdal Bavel, what they wanted to do is replace God. We don't need him. It says they got together and they said, let's make bricks. And they made bricks. Then they said, hey, we have bricks. Let's make a tower and a city. Usually works the other way. First you have a goal. Let's make a city. Now we need bricks, building materials. You don't have a goal to make building materials and then decide what to do with it. But what they did is they said the following. Until now, we built with stone. That's God's contribution to the world. But we can improve on that. We can make something artificial called bricks. And the bricks become stone. That's what they wanted. They wanted to do something that replaced the need for using God's materials. We want to build this world our way. And once they had the artificial means to build, now they said, let's build a tower and a city, and we don't need to be subservient to God. We can do it our way. That was the intention. That's why it says by the Tower of Babel, the Zeh Hachilam La'asos. Simple meaning, they're all one mind and one language, and this began them to start this endeavor. Hachilam can mean to start. La'asos, to start doing what they were doing. But I think there's another meaning. He said that God created the world, Asher Bar Elokim, he created the world in its raw state, unfinished, unperfected state, la'asos, that man should perfect it. These people took that la'asos, man's part, and hachilam, they made it chol. They desecrated it. Hachilam la'asos, they desecrated the la'asos. Because man is supposed to be a partner with God. He's supposed to realize that God provided him with the wherewithal to develop the world, but the way that, within God's framework. But if man thinks he can do it on his own, in his own framework, then he's desecrating his purpose in this world. So people can get carried away with the fact that they are supposed to transform the Adama into Aretz, to develop the world, and develop themselves. And they may think that they can do it out of God's framework, their own way. Therefore, God put a safety into this system called rain. Because as much as man works and thinks that he can replace God, there's one thing that he can't replace. And that is crucial to changing the ground, the Adama, into Aretz, and changing himself from Adam to Ish, is rain. Rain is something that man can't produce. Rain is one of the keys that HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds for himself and gives over to no shaliach, no intermediary. Rain comes directly from God. And therefore, the rain reminds a person that try as you may, you'll never be able to perfect yourself or perfect the world if you don't have rain, and you can't make rain yourself. You are dependent on God for rain. So there's always an ingredient in this equation. That's what it means, that all of them are equal. You need human beings to develop the earth, and you need rain for human beings to develop themselves on the earth. And that always reminds a person that he's dependent and subservient to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not just a matter of Hakaras HaTov, recognizing that God gives us rain and being grateful for it. It's a reminder that without the Ribono Shel Olam, I can't do it. I can't perfect myself or the world unless it rains. And rain is something that I can't control, even till today. No scientist can make it rain. Even cloud seeding has to start with clouds. And even that is not guaranteed. Right? So there's nothing that you can do today, scientifically, that will guarantee that it will rain. It's all dependent on the Ribono Shel Olam. And therefore, rain is part of the equation that reminds a person who he is. And that's why we normally think that the reason God created rain is because plants need rain to exist, and plants give oxygen through photosynthesis, and people need water to drink, so Mamela has to rain. But the truth is not like that. Just the opposite. Because the Ribono Shel Olam felt there was a need for rain, that's why he made plants dependent on rain. Not because plants are dependent on rain did God make the rain system. I'll prove it to you. It says right away in the beginning of the world that there was a mist that covered the earth, and the trees had not yet, they were at the surface of the ground, but they didn't yet protrude because there was no human beings to work the land. A simple meaning seeming, God held back the vegetation and the trees till there were people to work the vegetation. But Rashi says it doesn't mean that. Rashi says what it means is the following. That the Ribono Shel Olam could have provided the trees and vegetation with an ongoing mist, and it would never need rain. You know what it's like, I don't know if you're familiar with it, the car batteries used to need constantly to fill them with water. Right? Water that had no acids or bases is what it's called. Distilled water. Thank you. It had to be filled with distilled water. And you always had to worry if your battery needed water and have it checked. And then they developed what's called worry-free batteries. That they have for the life of the battery, the water supply never goes away. You never have to add water. It's sealed hermetically, and the water never evaporates, and it's worry-free. You don't have to worry about adding water. I usually find that the worry-free means you can worry for free. You don't have to pay for it. But somehow the water still evaporates. That's what it's supposed to be. God could have made worry-free plants and given them a water supply that would last their entire lifetime without the need for rain. So why did God make the whole rain system? In order that human beings should recognize the need for it and daven for it. Meaning that really didn't have to be rain. Rain didn't have to be because that's the way the nature is. God could have created nature differently. But in order that people should realize that they need rain and they can't produce it and they're dependent on God and they'll come and daven to the Ribono Shel Olam for it, that's why the Ribono Shel Olam made rain. And until there were human beings, there was no need for that. Therefore, there was no need for rain. It was a constant mist, which could have existed after that. So the purpose of rain is to remind us who we are, what we are. Yes, we have a tremendous ability to perfect the world and develop the world and develop ourselves and perfect ourselves, but we need an ingredient that we can't provide to remind us that we have to do it within God's framework. God made us partners with him, but we are junior partners, and he makes the rules. And rain reminds us. Therefore, rain is equal to the day the Torah was given. It's equal to it's all these important things that show the purpose of the world. And the guidance of that purpose, rain tells me the same lesson. Rain tells me that we are bound and subservient to the Ribono Shel Olam, no matter how great we are and how much we can accomplish in this world and how much we're supposed to accomplish, we have to do it within the framework that God gave, because there's an ingredient in all of that that we can't provide that we need the Ribono Shel Olam for. And that's rain. So when it rains, it should remind us of our subservience on the Ribono Shel Olam, and also how much we owe a gratitude for him providing that ingredient and giving us the opportunity to perfect ourselves and perfect the world around us. Okay. And therefore, it could be that even though the Rabban Shalom is the one who gives rain, he makes us partners in that too. That tzaddikim, if they do mitzvahs and daven properly, then and they learn Torah properly, then the sati gishmeichem, it becomes your rain. You become the ones who are partners with me in bringing the rain too. But if you don't do what's right, then it's only mutter. Then I'll give the rain for the sake of the earth, for the sake of reminding you. But it's not your rain. That's why when we speak about God's power of bringing rain, we speak about Geshem, which man can initiate through his tefillas. But still we say it's you, God. Ultimately, we can initiate it, but without you, there's nothing to initiate. You gave us the power to initiate it. You made our mitzvahs potent or whatever. So when we say Mashiv Aruach Morid HaGeshem, we mention Geshem. Even the Geshem that could be initiated by man, we give credit to God that ultimately it's him who brings it. Even if we initiate it, it's because God gave us the power to do that. So we don't take the credit for it. On the other hand, when we ask for rain, we don't want to ask for our rain. Give us rain that we initiated. Even give us rain that you initiate, mutter, where it's only because of the goal and the target, not how it comes down, that we created it and we initiated it. But we're asking for rain, even if it's not that great rain that we have a connection, at least give us rain that's coming because of the target, because the earth needs it, even if we don't deserve it. So when we ask for rain, we ask for the minimal, mutter. When we mention that God brings rain, it's his power, we say even the rain that we can initiate is really God's doing. That's the reason why the same Talu Mutter and Mashiv HaRuach Morid HaGosh. Okay, any questions on this? Now I want to go to another subject. This week's Shedra, we have Avraham Avinu, the Baal Chesed represented by Hachnosis Orchim. He brings his guests into his house, and we're to learn from Avraham Avinu, Chesed of Hachnosis Orchim. Chesed is a function of being a giver and not a taker. Right? Michtav Yo says that there are two kinds of people in this world. There are givers and takers, and a person should always strive to be a giver and not a taker. Because a person who's always interested in taking only cares about himself and only thinks about himself. And therefore he's very biased. Everything he sees in the world is through his needs and his desires and his wants. And in that respect he doesn't see God so much. He sees himself. They say the difference between a mirror and a window is if you put a little kesef, a little silver on the window, it becomes a mirror. A little kesef means something you desire. Desires make you see only yourself. If you don't have those desires, then you can see the whole world. And you see God out there too. So therefore, it's greater to bring in guests in your home, which means I'm giving up my space for somebody else. There's no greater way of saying that it's not all about me. Because I'm willing to give over and yield to somebody else. So that's even greater than receiving God. Because a person who's able to yield his place for somebody else will be able to be objective and see God. Somebody who can't yield his place, who only sees himself, is going to see the whole world around himself and not going to see God too much either. So chesed is the function of giving and not taking. And a person who's a giver and not a taker is a more spiritual person also. So that is what chesed is all about. Chesed is give, don't be a taker. Okay. There's only two problems with this. First problem is, if we all strive for the ideal to be givers, then who's going to be the takers from those givers? If everybody's giving, nobody's around to take, so you can't give to anybody. So there has to be at least one person to volunteer to be a taker. Otherwise, people can't be givers. So, theoretically speaking, how could everybody be givers? One question. Second question. Avraham Avinu is the big Baal Chesed, right? He gives to his guests, and we see how he treats his guests, and he brought them a lavish meal, right? He served them first milchiks, then fleishiks, which is also difficult. Why would he do such a thing? He knew though what the Torah was going to do, and even if he did it in a permissible way, but that's not the way you eat meals. And it says Avraham Avinu invited these people to his home, and where did he feed them? Outside under a tree. Now, it's not that Avraham Avinu didn't have a nice, lavish, air-conditioned home. He did, right? It was air-conditioned, open on all four sides. Probably was a very nice home. And if I invited guests and kept them outside under a tree, my wife would have my head. This is Achnosas Orchim. No matter how hot it was outside, it's still cooler inside than under a tree outside. And so I would think that, well, maybe Avraham Avinu was not the greatest host, and he should have brought him inside. But the Medrash says not like that. The Medrash says in the Schus that Avraham Avinu served these guests under the tree. We were Zocha later to the mitzvah of Sukkah. That's when we got Sukkah. So it must be that he did something right. So what was right about keeping them outside under a tree and not bringing them inside? Another question. Avraham Avinu is a giver, right? He doesn't take. We see that in last week's Sedra, that when Melech Sodom wants to give him all the spoils and just to take the people, Avraham says, I'm not taking anything. You can keep the people, you can keep the spoils. I won't take a shoelace from you because I don't want anybody saying they made me rich. Okay. So Avraham Avinu is a giver, not a taker. But I'll give you three other instances where Avraham Avinu took very nicely. Paro gave him presents. He took them. He didn't say, well, I'm not letting you make me rich. He took all the presents that Paro gave him after he took Sarah. He gave him presents, right? And Avraham was looking forward to those presents. He says, little man, you say you're my sister, and they'll give me presents to vie for your hand. So I thought he was only a giver, not a taker. Here he's looking for presents. Second time he took, Malki Tzev, they came and brought wine and bread, and he gave him Maisa. There's an argument amongst the commentaries who gave who. But one opinion is that Malkitzedek, who was Shem ben Noach, Noach's son Shem, was also called Malkitzedek. He was the king of Yerushalayim, of Shalem. That's what it was called in those days. And he gave Avraham Meiser, because Avraham was a Kohen. Some say the opposite. Malkitzedek was a Kohen. Avraham gave Malkitzedek Meiser. But there's an opinion that says that Malkitzedek gave Avraham. And Avraham took it. Avraham is not a taker. He's a giver. But he took here. And in this coming week's Sedra, Avimelech takes Sarah, and then he finds out it's Avram's wife, and he's very embarrassed, and he gives Avram money and presents, and Sarah money and presents, and they take it. Avram doesn't say, I'm sorry, I'm a giver, I don't take. Took very nicely. So one time he didn't take by Melech Sodom, and three times in the Torah he did take. So Avram is a giver, not a taker. It seems to me like he takes a lot more than he gives. And Avraham is the ultimate chesed. Chesed is giving, not taking. And here Avraham also took. The answer, I think, is that being a giver or a taker does not depend on who is handing over and who is receiving. Sometimes you can receive and be a giver. And sometimes you can hand over and be a taker. Let me give you an example first of where a person looks like he's a giver and really he's a taker. And then we'll understand Avraham and the guests. And then we'll understand the opposite way, where a person can receive and really be the giver. And then we'll understand why Avraham Avinu received three times, and it wasn't considered taking, and he didn't receive one time, because that would have been considered taking. Let's see each thing. First, let me give an example where somebody appears to be a giver, but he's really a taker. I've come across this many times as a rabbi. Somebody's sick in the hospital. And people come, they want to be Makayim the mitzvah of Bikur Chol, they want to fulfill the mitzvah of visiting the sick. So they come to the hospital, and they find that the person that they came to visit is asleep. Now, from my experience in the hospital, even more from my wife's experiences in the hospital, I know that one of the hardest things to do when you're in the hospital is get to sleep. Because even if you get to sleep, they wake you up to take sleeping pills so they can put you to sleep. It's very difficult. A person's sick, very difficult to get to sleep. And the hospital does make it easier. So somebody already is sick and they're asleep, that probably is what they want to remain. They don't want to be woken up. Right? But I came to visit you and get a mitzvah, Bikur Cholim. What's going to be with my mitzvah? You're asleep. So more refined people send the nurse in to see if the person's really asleep, meaning wake them up, I'm here. Less refined people walk into the room, knock over a chair, make a tremendous amount of noise. The person wakes up and says, oh, I didn't mean to wake you. But yeah, you meant to wake them because I want my mitzvah. And if you're asleep, what kind of mitzvah do I get? Now, sometimes the truth is that the person would rather have a visitor than remain sleeping. They really want the visitor. But many times, the visitor can come later. Right now, I'm asleep. I don't want to be woken up. So the proper thing to do probably would be to call the person ahead of time, tell them that you're coming, and ask them, if I find you asleep, do you want me to wake you up or not? Right? Or leave a note and say, I was here, right, and I found that you were asleep. I didn't want to wake you up. And if you want me to come back or whatever, please let me know. Something like that. Okay. But in that situation where the person wakes up the patient, and the patient really did not want to be woken up because they're sick, and being asleep, being able to fall asleep when you're sick is a bracha. So the person who came to visit the sick appears to be a giver. He's giving this person a bikur cholim. And the person who's sick appears to be the taker. But what's really the situation? The person who is coming is taking from this sick person a mitzvah, right? I'm using you as a means to get my, I got to get my mitzvah of visiting the sick. Baruch Hashem, you're sick, so I can get a mitzvah. And you have the chutzpah being asleep, you're going to wake up and give me my mitzvah. So even though it appears like the visitor is the giver and the sick person is the taker, it's mamash just the opposite. The visitor is the taker and the sick person is the giver. Avraham Avinu was a person who did chesed, tailor-made it to the needs of the person who got the chesed. He sees these three people rushing past him. He has to run after them. They're obviously in a hurry. Okay? When you're in a hurry, you have to, an appointment to make, you have a plane to make, and you're in a hurry. And somebody says, oh, just stop at my house for a few minutes. What do you know? You're never going to get out of there. You're going to be looking at your watch and constantly apprehensive that right now I don't need to go to anybody's house. I'm in a rush. When you're in a rush, you don't want to be detained by having to come to visit somebody in their house or to walk into somebody's house, because once you walk in, you can't politely walk out without permission, and who knows what's going to be, and you're in a rush. So Avraham Avinu saw these people in a rush. So inviting them into his house, he knew, would be oppressive to them, because they'd be constantly looking at their watch to see when we get out of here already. So therefore, Avraham said like this, I know you're in a rush. I want to do you a favor and give you something to eat, but I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. So I'm not going to bring you into my house. You sit under the tree and eat. If you have to leave, you're not walking out of my house, which is not nice. You're just leaving my yard. Right? I never brought you into the house. So I never put you in a situation where your being in a rush is going to be compromised by my wanting to do a mitzvah. True, I won't look as good a host, but I'm not doing it for me, I'm doing it for you. And therefore, Avraham said the following. If you're really in a rush, I have a dairy meal ready prepared, easy, bring some milk and cheese or whatever, eat and run. But if you're not really in a rush, you just said that to me because you didn't want to bother me, then we're preparing a nice meat meal. It may take longer, but if you have the time, stay by, I'll give you a nicer meal. It's up to you. You want to rush? There's milchiks ready right away, goodbye. You want to wait? There's a place you can meal. You take your choice. I'm making the mitzvah to suit your needs, not to suit my needs. For me, it'd be better to bring you in the house, serve you a nice meat meal, but I know that that's not what you need. If you're really in a rush, that's going to be oppressive to you. It's not going to fill your needs. So I do the chesed in a way that fills your needs. And therefore, because Avraham Avinu was able to accommodate the chesed to the needs of the one he was giving it to, not to his needs. He was a real giver. Even though I didn't look so good, people would say, oh, you left them outside. But I did it because that's what they needed. And that's what the chesed is, not to make me look like a good host, but to be a good host for their needs. Because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the mitzvah of sukkah, meaning the following. The mitzvah of sukkah really depended on the anon yakovah, the clouds of glory. But we're human beings, and we can't really deal with clouds of glory without seeing something material in front of us. So God made his chesed fit us, and he gave us real sukkahs too, both of them. And that's the sukkah that's opposite the tree. The Anoni Akavo, that was God's chesed to us to envelop us with clouds of glory. But we're human beings. We need to see a roof above us, and we need to see walls or whatever. So because Avraham Avinu was able to accommodate his chesed to the needs of the guests and not to what his needs were, God accommodated our needs and gave us a real sukkah in addition to the clouds of glory. That's the meaning of that message. So that's how it's possible for a person to be appear to be a giver, but really is a taker. Because he's doing the chesed for his sake, not for the people he's doing it for sake. The person, like the person who visits the sick, get his mitzvah. Unlike Avraham Avinu, who tailor-made his chesed for the needs of the recipient, not for what makes him look good. Now let's see the opposite case. How can a person take and still be considered a giver? First possibility. The person takes in order to give. If you don't ever take anything, what's rightfully coming to you, you'll have nothing ever to give. You can never do chesed. If you don't receive the wherewithal to give to other people, you won't be able to give to other people. I remember the Alter Satmar Rebbe, Rebbe Yolish. He used to spend his winters in Miami. And so I was a high school student. We used to go to Shabbos sometimes, to his Tish or Shalosh Shudas or whatever. I remember during the week, once seeing people come to him for brachas, kvitlach, and they used to give him tremendous amount. He had a lot of rich chassidim, and they used to give him tremendous amounts of money, and he had this robe with bulging pockets full of money, full of $100 bills, $50 bills, bulging. So I said to myself, hey, when I grow up, I'm going to be a Rebbe. This is like good business, right? What's it called? This guy is loaded. And then I noticed that poor people came, put his hand into his pocket, didn't even look. Took out a handful, gave it to the poor person, till his pockets were empty. Then they filled up again by the people who came for brachas. Then they became emptied again. He wasn't rich. He was a clearinghouse. Right? He took money and passed it on. And he wasn't a rich man, so he couldn't have given it out of his own. So he took from, he didn't steal from people, he wasn't Robin Hood, right? He took from people who wanted to give him money, and he deserved it. He gave them brachas or whatever, they gave it willingly in order that he should be able to give. So he took in order to give. That's called giving. I'll prove it to you. The heart is a symbol of a Baal Chesed, a good heart. One of the reasons why a good heart is a symbol of Chesed is because the heart gives blood to the whole body. So it's a giver. But if you know physiology, biology, you know that the heart receives the blood from the body too. Right? So the veins send the blood back to the heart, and the heart gets all the blood from the body just as much as it sends to the body. So the body, the heart, is as much a taker as a giver. Why is it considered a giver? The answer is very simple. The heart doesn't take the blood from the body for its own purposes. It doesn't even, the heart has veins and arteries that supply it with blood on the outside. But what goes into the heart and the chambers of the heart isn't for the sake of the heart. It's in order for the heart to pump it back to the lungs where it becomes oxygenated and then comes back to the heart, and then the heart pumps it to the rest of the body. So the only reason the heart takes blood from the body is to be able to send it back to the body with oxygen, not for its own sake. So the heart, yes, takes as much blood as it gives out, but its whole purpose is to be able to give it out. So taking for the sake of giving is giving. And that's why Avraham Avinu took from Paro. Avraham Avinu left Eretz Israel in a famine. He was poor. He had nothing. He couldn't even pay his hotel bills. He had to take credit. He owed money. He had to supply food for his students. He was responsible for them, for his wife. And he couldn't. The Rabban Shem promised to make him a rich man. All of a sudden, Paro takes his wife, and Paro willingly wants to shower gifts on Avraham to make his conscience feel good.
Abram says, here God is sending me the money that he promised to make me rich. And I have a responsibility to take it. Because if I don't take it, how will I pay my debts? And I owe people, they're going to suffer if I don't take it. How am I going to support my students if I don't take it? So obviously God is the one who sent me this means of making me rich in order that I should be able to give to others. So Abram took, but he took in order to be able to give. Because if he didn't take, other people would suffer. He owed them money. The hotel people, they would suffer. So he took in order to give. He took what was what Paro wanted to give him, rightfully coming to him. Right? You know, there's a joke. Say a person, what's it called, is in a flood, and he's on top of his roof, and the waters are getting higher and higher, and he prays and prays and says, God, please save me. Please save me. And first a helicopter comes, and he says, no, I'm praying to God. God's going to save me. That's the helicopter. Then a boat comes to save him. And he says, no, I'm praying to God. God is going to save me. And finally, what's it called? The waters envelop him, and he drowns. And his neshama goes to Shemayim, and he comes before God's throne. And he says, God, why didn't you save me? God looks at him. I sent you a boat. I sent you a helicopter. Right? The Ribbono Shel Olam works through natural means. So if the Ribbono Shel Olam set up that Paro should give him all these presents, that's how God made him rich. And Avram recognized that, and he took, not to take, he took in order to be able to give. Second possibility of taking, and it's considered giving, to give kavod to the person who gave it. Some people get kavod out of giving people things. To give you a simple example, true example. When I first became a rabbi many, many years ago, I decided I'm going to be a tzaddik, and I am not taking anything from anybody. I have a salary. I'm going to live on my salary. I'm not taking anything else. People usually give rabbis in America, for sure, money when they sell the chametz. I'm not taking any money. And people come and give presents to rabbis. They go to Israel, come back, bring present for the rabbi, or a present for this yontif or that yontif. I will not accept any presents. That's it. I'm going to be a big tzaddik. And this went on for a few months. People brought me presents from Israel. They went, I said, I'm sorry, but my policy is I don't accept presents. I appreciate it, but sorry, I can't take it. People wanted to give me presents for yontif or mechiras. It wasn't Pesach. I didn't make it to Pesach. And I didn't accept presents. One day, one of my elderly balabatim, who probably I now would look at as a youngster, but at that time he looked to be an elderly balabas, came to me and said, Rabbi, you'll excuse me. I'm going to be very blunt with you, and you'll forgive me. But I got to tell you something. You think you're a big tzaddik because you don't take presents from people. You are insulting these people and hurting their feelings, because they want to get the honor of the rabbi taking a present from them. And you're telling them your presents are meaningless to me and I'm not taking it, and you are insulting them. Take the present. You don't want to, what's it called, use it, put it away. That's your business. But at least give these people the honor of taking what they want to give you. So you didn't have to convince me too much. From then on, I took presents. And by Pesach already, I took money for the Mechiras Chometz too, because... But that's the truth is that sometimes if you don't take something from someone, then you're insulting them. They get honored by you taking a present from them. They're the ones who are receiving. You're giving them that decency, that covet of taking from them. I remember somebody once gave me a present here in Eretz Yisrael of some ties. Now, those ties, I don't think I'd be caught dead in. They were really, grotesque. But I couldn't tell the guy, I wouldn't wear these ties, if I was dead. So I took them graciously, and then I figured, what am I going to do? Because I was pretty much, the guy saw me at least sometimes. If he never saw me in those ties, and I came up with a great idea. There was one time in the year where I could wear those ties without any problem. Purim. So Purim, I used to put on his ties and go and give him Shalach Manas. So he'd see I wore the tie. He didn't know that I only wore it on Purim. But Purim was no problem. It really fit for Purim perfectly. So sometimes taking from someone gives them honor and enables them to feel good. And if you don't take, you're denying them that. So Avraham Avinu took from Avimelech for that reason. Avimelech did something that he felt very embarrassed. He took Sarah, thinking it was Avram's sister. He didn't bother to ask if it was also his wife. And he felt like very, very embarrassed. He was a refined Yirei Shamayim, right? And here he takes somebody else's wife. So he wanted to get back his self-respect. So he wanted to make sure that Avram and Sarah had no misgivings against him. So he gave them presents, and if they wouldn't have accepted it, it would have been a slap in the face to him. It would have meant, we don't want anything to do with you. But the fact that they accepted it gave him the self-respect and self-esteem back, that these people have no complaints against me. They'll take the present, and everything is okay. So Avram took from Avimelech to give honor for Avimelech. He was giving, not taking. He took the money. But it wasn't for the sake of taking, it was for the sake of giving Avimelech that self-respect that he wanted to gain by giving the present. The third way of taking, which is really giving, is the following. And this is a common problem. In every relationship, there's those that give and those that take. Every relationship, whether it's parents or husband and wife or whatever, there is the phenomenon of the Jewish woman. Jewish woman loves to be a martyr. She never likes to take, she always likes to give, right? The proverbial Jewish mother, right? There's a ton of food. She has one kid sitting at the table with her and her husband, and they serve the food. She says, no, I can't eat. Let my child have it. What do you mean let your child? If your child will eat a ton of food, there's enough to left over for an army, right? If you eat, you're not going to prevent your child from eating. No, let my child have it. She's a proverbial martyr, never wants to take, only to give. That's very nice, but it's not nice at all. Because if one side of a relationship is always the giver, then the other side is always the taker, and that's a demeaning thing. If you don't let somebody else be a giver, you're demeaning them. And therefore, sometimes you have to take, even though you would rather not, in order to enable somebody else to give. That's also giving. Giving someone else the ability to be a giver. Because if you don't ever take, then you don't enable them to be a giver. So the world is made up of givers and takers, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody always has to be giving out and never receiving. There's a time to receive, and you're a giver by receiving. There's a time to give out, and you're a giver by giving. And the opposite is also true. So it's not a problem with everybody always giving out and nobody ever receiving, and then they're givers, because sometimes you have to receive also to be a giver. The only time Avraham Avinu didn't take, when none of these conditions applied, where he would have been taking what somebody didn't want to give him, what somebody didn't get any honor for giving to Avraham Avinu, Melech Sodom just begrudgingly would give. For the sake of Avraham, Avraham said, I don't take for my sake. If I'm taking for your sake, I'll take. But taking for my sake, that not. So Melech Sodom, he knew, gained nothing from him taking. Right? He had already enough money to be able to give. He didn't need from what Melech Sodom. Melech Sodom would just say, I made Avraham rich. And therefore Avraham said, taker, I'm not a taker. But if my taking will achieve giving to somebody else in one of the ways that we mentioned, then I'm willing to take in order to give to somebody else. So that's what chesed really is.